Gary Kurtzals, and I am the host for this episode of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of the operations group at the National Warfighting Training Center at Fort Irwin, California, part of our Warrior Chronicles. The Gauntlet drives warfighting by talking to leaders from our joint force about the crucible of ground combat, leadership, training, and fighting here at the crown jewel of our Army. You know, today is such a special day for me. I get to sit down with two war machine leaders. So the first one, fresh out of the crucible, is Command Sergeant Major Jacob Huckabee, the Command Sergeant Major of the 2nd Armored Brigade Combat Team, Dagger, 1st Infantry Division, to discuss the duties of the non-commissioned officers inside of his formation. And then as a bonus, we get Command Sergeant Major Mike DeLeon, fresh out of the seat from Europe as Ready 7, as he transitions in to be the Operations Group Sergeant Major. So good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Morning.
Both of you guys been friends of mine for a long time. What I find interesting is we talk the tangibles and the intangibles of warfighting. And we're having a short conversation earlier about the tangibles we can always measure. So inside the Dagger Brigade, inside of the Ready First team, inside of my own war machine when I was down there in Grey Wolf. But what really sees when we see culture inside of an organization, it really falls into that realm of intangibles. It's the stuff you can't really put a finger on, but you know it's working because you can feel it, you can taste it. It's just like when you come off a gun table six run at 02 in the morning. If you're worth your salt as a tank commander, you already know where you kind of sit. Sergeant Major Huckabee, what do you think about that?
I think when you look at the intangible piece of a culture in an organization, I always tell everybody it's all about the time that you're willing to invest in to the formation. When you look at the intangibles of any formation, I really think it's being down in the dirt. Even as a brigade sergeant major, I think you build your successes by being down in the dirt. And then for me specifically for the NCO Corps, like you've got to endure that suck with them. And if you can do that, then I think you can start changing the culture of your formation. Mike, I see you do it with your boys there in the winter circle. It's hard to replicate it, but you have to be down in the dirt.
You're 100%. It's hard to replicate. I'm going to bring in Sergeant Major Daly on here. I got to sense it when you guys showed up. I got to sense it 6 months ago when the Ready 1st Brigade Combat Team is here. You can just sense it. You just see people drive in action. As I say, you see like an empowered NCO Corps, because that's really what we're talking about today. The power of an NCO Corps, not an individual, inside of a formation. Sergeant Major DeLeon, in the winner's circle over there, I know you had some great initiatives. If you want to talk about a couple of them that you think that were tangible, that you can tie back to the intangible of just feeling a war machine that is ready to dominate in the ground domain.
Thanks for having me. You know, I'm excited to talk about warfighting and winning. In the Ready First Combat Team, you know, we have a saying, it's welcome to the winner's circle. And that's our motto, that's our brand, that's our culture, that's our identity. And really, that's one of the most challenging things when you come into a leadership position. What do you want to leave behind, right? What do you want to be known for? One of the greatest efforts I put down was, what are we yelling? What are we screaming every day? What is our identity? How are we messaging that consistently? How are we marketing it? And then how are we delivering it across the Army? But most importantly, all the way down and in. And so when you look at the tangibles and the intangibles going from training, for one, what do we need a commander to have? We need to have a high tolerance for risk. We need them to be decisive. And then what is the NCO's roles and responsibilities with that? It's driving it all the way down with key efforts that you can measure. And so for NCOs in the officer transition, it's the training and certifying individuals, small teams, and crews. And that's why I love gunnery. Gunnery is a crew training event, and that's NCO business. What that translates to is owning tasks, time, and people in the next 24 so that your commanders or your officer counterparts can own tomorrow and fight the collective fight. But it goes down to, how are you fostering and driving competition within your formation? Because that's important, right? I said before we entered the box to the combat power brief, I said, hey, we're ready. We're here to learn, we're here to fight, but most importantly, we're here to win. And hopefully that was demonstrated during our rotation here, which was demonstrated in the Dagger from what I just observed.
I will tell you, it was demonstrated by both rotations. You know, we always talk culture and climate in the Dagger Brigade, that is stay savage, seek battle. And you know, from my time in the Army, we either look at culture or climate. And the way I say it, just layman terms, you know, just down and dirty, if you're a true inspirational generational leader, you will focus on changing culture. people of lesser standards will look at changing logos. And we see it all the time with somebody shows up, they don't want to run with a logo or a name of an organization. And the first thing they want to do is change it. But when we look at lines of effort, enduring, that are going to stay woven into the culture or the fabric of a formation, winner circle for you. And I really think, Huck, you know, your stay savage, seek battle is generational. It is going to stay in that brigade for a long time. Mine was win every fight in Grey Wolf. As we look at that, your motto, stay savage, seek battle. How do you see that being woven into the fabric of your NCO Corps?
Me and Mike had this conversation probably about 8 months ago about what is the identity and how do you build an identity within a formation. There's an identity there already, no matter what, when you show up. Now how do you take it to the next level and change that? When you look at the identity, we said, what does Dagger want to be known for? Well, we're known across Fort Riley already as the Blue Collar Brigade on the formation. And so then you took all that hard work and effort, and then the 300 days in the last year in the field. Everything that we did was about the empowerment of the NCO. It was about becoming subject matter experts, but staying savage and seeking battle. And then there's one other part that we really didn't say, and it was ride for the brand. And if you know about the Wyoming brand, that was a part of their brand, was ride for the brand. We wanted to ride for the Blue Collar Brigade. We never wanted to lose our edge. To stay savage piece is about not losing your edge. You can endure it. Are you willing to endure it? Back to the warrior ethos. You've got to be the first one to fight, or you can initiate that by being aggressive. And Mike, I think you brought up a really good point about a commander that assumes a little bit of risk. You've got to have it, right? Because if you don't have it, what happens? There's always that pause before you jump into a fight. And it doesn't matter what the fight is. It doesn't matter if the fight's gunnery. You've got to have a commander that fosters that within a formation.
I'll challenge you a little bit. I think all our commanders are assuming a little bit of risk.
Yeah.
Because like when we talk large-scale ground combat, this term is kind of it's a bumper sticker. Bold maneuvers are legends. People that have done it, all right? Patton wouldn't be Patton if he didn't assume a lot of risk and do bold maneuvers. General Creighton Abrams, same way. And you can look at how he assumed risk from the battalion level in World War II all the way to when he was the chief of staff of the Army during Vietnam. And then General Norman Schwarzkopf through Desert Storm, and even General Tommy Franks. I'm with you. I think commanders at all echelon are assuming a little bit of risk. We got to somehow tie our intangibles, that fighting spirit, the warrior ethos, so commanders will assume a lot of risk. And then we'll see some true bold maneuvers with an empowered NCO Corps. And what I find super unique about the NCO Corps, you know, we say technical and tactical experts. And I'm curious from both of you, like, what do you think is more important for an NCO? Either tactical competence or technical?
For me personally, right, having the Master Gunner background, it's harmonizing both. Almost that work-life balance. It's more of like technical-tactical harmony. And really, it's situation-dependent. But most of it comes from the requirement to be technically proficient. I think that's the greatest value of the non-commissioned officer corps is the experiences in different positions and different echelons to help complement our commanders on filling in tactical seams. It goes back to that identity, that culture based on experience. That tolerance for risk and that decisiveness comes from what the Army invested in you as either a non-commissioned officer or an officer, but as a leader throughout your time to develop certain skill sets in the right formation. So it goes back to that right leader, right position, right time to execute that right mission. So for me personally, I lean more towards the technical piece than the tactical piece. And then that transitions when we go into the field or we're about to execute a tactical mission. Then depending on the situation, the experience level we're coaching or who our officer counterpart is just to find opportunities to fill tactical seams from what their blind spots are.
If you were to put it in percentage from what you just said, I'm going to say you're 60-40.
Yeah, spot on.
60% technical, 40% tactical. And Dagger 7.
Being the only one sitting here that's not a Master Gunner, I see it a little bit different. But I do think, Mike, to your point, you've got to find that harmony. For me, it's easy to say it's a 50-50, but I think a 60-40 is good. You can't be so much technical that you lose your decisiveness. I think that gets to overthinking things and not necessarily being decisive when that moment matters. But it really does go back to your experience. The experiences that you have as a soldier really coming up and growing into a leader. While I've had multiple experiences out here in the desert, this is my first one as a brigade sergeant major. There's a lot to be learned here. Am I more technical at a brigade level, or am I more tactical? I probably venture to say I'm more technical. Back when we were, the maneuvers that we were, like fighting to seize something, it was much more tactical. I think there's a harmony to it. And in that harmony, you've got to adapt to how does fights play out? And it's not just here that fights play out. It's how do you adapt to the fights that play out at home? You've got to figure out how to bend what is important to get the best out of it, whether it be at home station, whether it be forward deployed.
So you're the same with Sergeant De Leon, 60% technical, 40% tactical.
I think so, but you two are a little more technical.
There's no right or wrong answer, yeah. Because if there was a right answer, it'd be black and white doctrine. If I could go back in time, I would change that. I would go 85% technical, and I'm just talking our core non-commissioned officers, and I'd go 15% tactical. But we go back to commander's risk, yeah, to enable bold maneuvers. And what I know to be true is formations, we're talking NCO specifically here, that are 85% technical, that know what their equipment is capable of, will enable that. Because you both got to see it. I got to see it. There is nothing more frustrating when you at the brigade level have an opportunity to apply combat power and force the enemy to react, and formations can't move. It's real simple, and this is just my own two cents. Every one of our formations that fight, you know, have a platoon leader, then they have a company commander. Those are the experts that are supposed to tell us where to drive. When we talk tactical, especially with armor warfare, that's what we're doing. You know, we are driving somewhere. We're providing a movement technique. All right, there's some key things we're looking for when to transition from movement to maneuver. But that's all we're doing. I would go back and wager that if we're looking to win large-scale ground combat decisively, that like the technical aspect inside of our NCO Corps needs to be 85. And I'm curious what you guys think about that. And now on the same note, you know, it takes a lot of time, but everything that we're trying to do is buy back time, because we've all been in this crucible of ground combat that is unforgiving and relentless, and it's how to get time back. But we've all done it. We all know that when we were senior staff sergeants that we could hop on a tank and execute the task. But the first time we set boots on there and there was nobody behind us to tell us what to do, that was kind of a lonely spot.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think you're spot on with your 85%. Every echelon was different for us. At the brigade level, it's a time suck. And what I noticed at this level is that you're demanded more to solve more problems. And there are so many problems at the brigade level. But if I go back all the way to when I was a tank commander, right, where my job was just to make sure my tank was fully mission capable, I was loaded, I was ready to rock and roll, and I close in and kill. Then as I transition into the platoon sergeant position, you're kind of straddling the tactical and the organizational just a little bit because of all the reporting requirements. Now it's demanding a little bit more technicality out of you. And then you go into the first sergeant position where you really transition into the organizational leadership, and where you see that demand signal increases, where you're not really a movement maneuver guy anymore, and you're straddling the sustainment warfighting function piece. And that demands a lot in itself. And then at battalion and brigade does the same thing, now at a larger scale. For me, during my rotation, I was all sustainment because I wanted to make sure that we fed into the lethality piece at the collective level. And on the technical aspect of it, it was just identifying seams in the loop from log stats to log pack. Somewhere in that loop, there was a break. I was determined to find it, to fix it, and then to carry on to the next problem set to solve. All the way down to my tank commander times, I would say yes, 100%, 85%, and you start seeing that shift or the harmony as you go into company, as you go into battalion, and really at brigade, where I had to understand what the deep and the close fight looked like, but most of my energy was focused on the rear.
I agree that you have to, it does transition to like an 85%. Mm-hmm. But if you pull the thread of how do you harmonize that by good home station training, ensuring that the systems are in place at home station to carry you forward into the fight.
100%. Sergeant De Leon, you talk about being a platoon sergeant. I just had a flashback. You know, I was a platoon sergeant down there in 1st Battalion, 77th Armor, White 4. As I said it, my time down there, like I was a fire-breathing dragon. Mm-hmm. And we talk about harmonization. And the critical thing about reporting that a platoon sergeant has to do, and I remember sitting out there in iron focus, everything's going great, and I'm doing my log stat. And I remember flipping open the SOP that I thought I was familiar at, and I said that we were all good to go. Like I'd given the first sergeant commander, I vetted it, you know, I've done all my due diligence. I probably didn't. Because as I'm going through the line report for a tank platoon, I'm seeing 60 millimeter mortar ammunition. I'm seeing 25 millimeter. I'm seeing javelin rounds. And it was foundational for me because we talk about technical aspect it takes to be a non-commissioned officer, not preparing our SOPs to create synergy. As Ready 7 Ancient said, from log stat to log pack. And as you talked about the rear echelon about generating combat power through a warfighting function that is really held accountable by the command SAR majors, which is sustainment. It's empowered by commanders. But talk to me about how important you think SOPs are at creating synergy inside of the Dagger Brigade war machine.
When I looked at our home station mission training, this was something that we never really completely tied down. Because the SOP throughout the whole training progression at home for that last year, how do we continue to adapt it? Because our team keeps changing. And the staff that we had for the first 5 months that I was there is not the staff that we got today. And how do you drive that forward? I don't know that we really hammered down our SOP to the degree that Colonel Tom Smith wanted.
And I think there's a little bit of false expectations in our Army about this. I got to see it through all my units, and I get to see it here where everybody's like, oh, well, we're working on our SOPs. We're always working on it,
right? They're always evolving, right? What you really have to create is shared understanding across the formation to ensure that we, one, do we follow our SOPs or do we not follow our SOPs? A lot of times you find that you're adapting your SOPs constantly. You have the foundation, but you're never putting those building blocks on it that will continue to make your formation successful.
Who in your brigade is responsible, as in the keeper of the SOP, no matter what version we're on? My own opinion, it should be the person responsible as the keeper of it is also the person that's responsible for the updates and then kicking out the next version.
It really all is collected by the XO or the 3. But every staff member has a piece of this pie. The gathering of it, coming out of every training evolution, I would say, we always had a synchronization board to ensure that we were putting the right things into our SOP. Good SOPs will follow you. I still carry the one from 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment from the invasion of Iraq.
I got the 177 and the 269 Armored one.
And then to that point, they follow you. When I was in my last assignment, I really got to know Colonel Smith through his SOP. And this was before ever meeting him, and it was because all the troopers that were in my formation at that time had come from 410 Cav. And really, when you're getting down to SOPs, that's what you want. You want something that someone can put in their cargo pocket and just carry it around with them, and they will use it forever because it's just a good product.
The first sergeant, they are the owner of the standard operating procedure. You know, I think we all probably have an opinion on what the best way to implement it to a formation, and I'll just say mine. Is the only way for it to actually be a part of the fabric of a formation is commanders at echelon must devote time to go through it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you know, when I was a first sergeant, my company commander, we did it quarterly. It's a little bit easier at the company level, but like he sat up there for 4 hours, went page by page. All right, you know me, by the numbers. All right, it's probably the drill sergeant badge on me. At the battalion level, Colonel Chuck Bees did it quarterly. And at the brigade level, I never quite got it mastered. Because it seems like at the brigade level is where the lines really get blurred because you got the 3 with the tax op, plans op. Yeah. You got the XO that's diving into them, but he's only looking at chapters 2 and 4. Then we tie in the things that you get at brigade level, sustainment and fires. They're trying to throw their piece in. I haven't quite figured out who should be at the brigade level, but if I was to go back, it would be my HHC brigade first sergeant that would be responsible for it. So I'm going to tie in Ready 7 here real quick, see what he did in his war machine, and then we'll come back to you.
I want to pull the thread on, you know, two topics that you brought up. So the first one is who's responsible, right? One of the things that I found out, you need to fix responsibility on someone, and you got to give them a realistic timeline. Going back to the final net that you provided, the Dagger Brigade, your first key point on how to improve, right, going from good to gooder, is to update your SOPs, to codify the newly identified best practices, because you at this point just went through blunt force trauma and have a lot of lessons learned, best practices identified in your head collectively. And so going back to your point where you said, hey, everybody's responsible for it, but it takes the right leader, like that HAC Brigade First Sergeant, to create a collaborative effort to get as much information to update and refine that SOP. For us, an SOP is an SOP. It's a target reference point, provides shared understanding. It gives and empowers, you know, that lowest level leader to be able to reference the SOP, but then we can exercise mission command and make some rapid decisions on the ground in favor of opportunities and risk. At the end of the day, an SOP is only as good as the last battle, and it has to continuously be updated through fixing responsibilities, through collaborative effort. It has to be easily digestible, too, all the way to the lowest level.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a question, and then I'll go first. How, in your own eyes, would you be able to do the intangible to know that you have a good SOP in your unit that leaders at all echelons are following? I'll do my favorite one, because as Ready 7, Ancient Future Outlaw 40 said, as I've learned over the years, if I say apply a VS-17 panel to a side of a vehicle, whether it's an IRC-A or IRC-P, and leaders at Echelon are able to do it immediately, I know that we're running off an SOP. So we have prioritized publication. We have applied financial resources to buy the things that are in there that say I need, and we're able to do it rapidly. So that's the one thing for me. I'm going to go to Future Outlaw 40, driving change across our Army, Sergeant Major DeLeon.
So the first point is the intangible. It is healthy, effective, and valuable feedback from the bottom up. It's a loop of information, providing refinements, providing recommendations on updating SOP. And then the second tangible point is that next fight. What is that next training event post the National Training Center or in preparation for another mission? And what are you, through battlefield circulation, identifying that they took as a lesson learned from this last fight and applied it to that next fight at scale? So you might have saw something in a team live fire event or a mission that occurred here. And really the tangible and intangible piece where it connects the two is you saw a different practice or a different approach or a different execution at just something as simple as a team live fire or at a platoon sticks or a platoon live fire. So just those two points from my end, you know, the healthy organization is a learning organization. And you're seeing change or adaptability to the best practice or TTPs on how we execute various mission sets all the way down to the lowest level.
For the Dagger Brigade, I really think it's making sure that we are prepared for the next fight. And then how do we take all of what we have learned in our recent training progression, putting it back into this SOP? Our next evolution for training won't be until we get to our next fight. And there's a whole lot that goes into that next fight, right? And a lot of lessons that carry forward with that, be it upload, be it download, or when called upon. How do you take all that, put it back into the formation, do it responsibly? A good organization is a learning organization. How do you codify that as you go forward? A lot of time, a lot of effort. And it's getting the right leaders into that room to really lock this in. So it really gets into commander's priorities and then getting that down to turret level. The 36 infantry squads in the formation must also know.
You know, all three of us were tank commanders. So when we say down to turret level, it's down to the lowest level, because something that's unique in our Army is we're preparing everybody for the next job as we go through. But I'll tell you, I enjoyed this conversation. It is amazing how fast 30 minutes fly by. So, you know, I'm just going to say thanks, Sergeant Major Huckabee, for your time and exceptional insight as Dagger 7, just fresh out of the crucible of ground combat up here. And then we got Sergeant Major DeLeon. Thanks for joining us. I'm pumped for our future and the innovative ways in which we are preparing for future battlefields. My team is on your team. I invite you to look at our latest products, whether that's social media or a direct email to Sergeant Major DeLeon. All right, and we will share, you know, the most recent trends, what we're seeing out here with transformation efforts across all echelons. For the last time, I'm Sergeant Major Gary Kurtzals, as the host of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, brought to you by Operations Group and the Warrior Chronicles.